Welcome back to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week I caught up with Fiona Hanlon. Fiona was commissioner at BBC Sounds before becoming the new managing director at Persephonica in Sheffield. We chatted about how she got into the radio industry, her first jobs, and what makes a great podcast idea. I am very heartened to speak to someone who is now a managing director of a very prominent podcast company who didn't pass their maths GCSE, because I've got a 15-year-old son who's got his mocks after Easter and he's really worried that he's not going to pass his maths GCSE. And I'll be able to say to him, don't worry, Fiona didn't either. Oh, I do like doing my research, Fiona.
Oh my God, yeah. That's a real good one. Some digging.
You are proof, positive, that it's okay.
You don't need it.
Tell me about this new role with Persephonica then, managing director. You've only been in the job, what, about a couple of months?
Yeah, not long. But Persephonica are an amazing company. They haven't been going very long at all. And they've just been making some amazing shows. And they don't make lots of things. They like kind of quite picky with what they make. And obviously Dino Sofos heads up the company. And then here's a top secret. He's also my husband. If anyone hasn't caught on to that yet. I'm really excited. Managing director for the business, you know, nobody has done this role before. It's a new role for the business. And it's just going to be about expanding our entertainment slate, because I come from an entertainment world. So I'm really excited about doing that. The business are just, they're really great at making podcasts and shows and building community. Miss Me live tour was only a few weeks ago. And it was two nights, sold out, Hackney Empire.
Massive, wasn't it?
It was incredible. Lily and Makita were just, it was like a kind of a once in a lifetime opportunity to see those girls on stage. Like, I've never seen anything like it. And it wasn't like your traditional sort of, and this is no shade on podcasts that do tours, you know, when you have two people sitting there and they're talking about it and the interview format. This was not that. You really got your money's worth. It was a party. Slash rave, slash sort of, you got a bit of like, you were hearing stories that you couldn't quite believe you were hearing. And there was a great part in the show where the audience can ask Lily Makita a question. And they were talking to Lily Allen, Makita Oliver, like they were best friends. Like the audience feel like they know them and they can give them some stick. And they really were like going at it. Like at one point, a guy said, right, yeah, he got up and he's got the mic and he said, Lily, can you tell us like the worst night out you've ever had? And she said a story about the Groucho and something going a bit wrong in there. And the guy went, oh, come on, you can do better than that. I was like, to say that to Lily Adam, I was like, but this is what they've created. They've created such a tight-knit community. I mean, it's a huge community. It feels like you are so on that journey with them. And so it's just so exciting where we're going as a company. We're really good at making really amazing podcasts, first of all, great audio. Then you kind of see them online on social clips and you see a few social clips. You're like, that's pretty good. Okay, I'm going to listen to podcasts. And now we're doing full YouTube clips. Well, not even clips, full YouTube videos. So the whole experience is just, it's so high end. It looks great, feels great, and everyone just feels like they're getting really good, like value for money, and it's just brilliant. I'm just really pleased for the team because they've just done such a good job.
So you were with the BBC for 17 years?
Yes. Yes, I was.
And you're now with Persephonica, but you obviously, you know, you went to university in Sheffield, you live in Sheffield. Mm-hmm. How important do you think it is to have a great production company like Persephonica, but they're outside that usual hub of London or Manchester?
Yeah. I wish so much that a company like this existed when I was at university here, because there was only BBC Sheffield that was here and the student radio station. One of the reasons I chose Sheffield Hallam, because they had a student radio station. Like, that was one of my key reasons to move to the city and do this course here. But if you were choosing a university course now and you knew in the city there was a really good production company and a BBC station, that's just like going to really encourage you to go there and study. So it's so important. It's just so important to just know that it's not all in London. Like, it's such a big move going to London sometimes. And it's so expensive.
Yes.
I don't think people quite realise that we're here. Last year when the office, we've got this really lovely office opening up in Lear's Yard in Sheffield. And when we opened up last year, the whole of Lear's Yard opened up and people coming through the doors and just seeing what was there, because there's shops and a pub and all that sort of stuff. And then people would come upstairs to the office. They'd be like, and I was like, this is an office and this is a podcast production company. And they'd be like, and you make Miss Me here. what? And I was like, yeah, these are the people that make it. We met here. And so it just blew people's minds that something so big and cool and amazing was made in, it was blowing people's minds. And so I think just doing more sort of just waving that flag of like, yes, it's okay. You can live out of London and still make cool things. It's hard. Naturally, you do go to London because that's where you're going to get more of the jobs. But in an ideal world, you would have more graduates who want to get into podcasting or radio or YouTube. The YouTube world is obviously huge. And so but you want to like nurture those people and be like, you know more than me about YouTube. Like, go forth, like create some ideas.
Let's talk about your start in the industry. You wanted to work in radio from about the age of 14, didn't you? I mean, you were absolutely determined to do that.
Yes. Yes, I didn't think it was possible. There was nobody in my life at all that worked anywhere close to the media. So it seemed pretty unachievable, but I'd always wanted to do it. And I remember listening to the radio. It must have been Chris Moyles. I was so gutted when they'd all go on holiday for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'd be like, this is, and then like the standard presenters, they're always fine, but you don't get the same. And I used to be absolutely gutted. And when I would hear all these voices pop up, I was like, I really want to be in there. That's what I want to do. I'd love to be in there. How do I do it? And I just didn't know how. At all. And so I went to college and I didn't want to put all my eggs in one basket because I was like, that's pretty scary. Like just focusing, just telling the world that it's just radio because I'm cutting myself off from lots of other opportunities. So I did media studies and performing arts. Safe to say, I didn't go down the performing arts route. I quite enjoyed it, but I wasn't naturally blessed in that area. Really enjoyed doing that. But when doing media studies at college, obviously we did a bit of film and TV. The long process of the filming, I found it really hard. I really, really enjoyed the live process. And so stuck with that and then went to university and did media studies again, but focused more in radio. But obviously I knew there was a student radio station and everything I'd read had said, work experience, student radio. So I was like, right, okay. So arrived at student Sheffield and first day that the clubs open was the student radio, so did it. And I was obviously the worst person in the world. Didn't know anything about anything. And I was like, yeah, I'll read the news. It's just silly. So I read the news, was rubbish at that because I talked too fast. And then eventually managed to get like a radio show. Did it with my friend, Lizzie, and she begrudgingly did it with me. Quickly realised, I was like, I'm not an on-air person. I love just making it. But I found it really difficult to get into the industry. So I was doing lots of applications at like Beavis Sheffield and apprenticeships and all that sort of thing. But it just wasn't working for me. I just wasn't getting any responses. And I quickly soon realised that when I'd meet people and talk to them, they'd say, you're great, you're going to be fine. I'd be like, yeah, but I'm not. Finish university. And then I kind of won the student elections, was vice president of the Sheffield Hallam Students' Union. I ran the student radio station and I ran the club nights. And that was it. Did that for a year. I was still sort of chipping away on where to go. But in my final year, this little bit of nugget happened. I'd won a competition on Zane Lowe's show to win like a band t-shirt because Arctic Monkeys were blowing up in my final year of university in Sheffield. So it was a very cool year. And Philippa Aylett, so she was the producer for Zane's show at the time. And she called me up and said, we don't have the t-shirt size for you, but I'll send you a load of CDs. And so she asked my address and I told her. She said, oh, I used to live at Sheffield Hallam. I used to go to Sheffield Hallam. I lived there. And I was like, why? That's me. And she was like, oh, we sort of shared some stories about teachers and stuff. And I said, but how do I get to be you? I want to be you. How do I do it? She sent the box of CDs. And in the box of CDs was a little note that said, email me if you want any work experience. So I was like, yes. Yeah, so I kept it and I kept it until I was ready because I was like, I'm not quite ready out of university. And then I sent the email and didn't hear back. Eventually got into an email chat with Philippa and then she's like, yeah, pop in for the day. And I arrived for the day in London, obviously thought this is the biggest day of my goddamn life. But I felt really ready for it. And I like opened Zane's post, you know, was really nervous and made lots of tea, but I'd had lots of experience. So I had lots to chat about and I obviously was an absolute Radio 1 fan and was listening every minute of every day because I needed to, because I wanted to. So when I was in the studio with Zane and Philippa, they genuinely said to me, you're great, you should work here. And I was like, yes
please.
Yes, that'd be amazing. And that was kind of it. And then Philippa put me in touch with Dina, who was sort of running all the staff contracts at the time. And she said, come in and be the kind of team assistant, which is like making the tea and stuff, clearing out the cupboards. Did that. And then that was it. And then I was in. And once everyone met me, they were like, yeah, great. You can do this. But trying to write that in a form for me was not going to happen. No. Just had the best time and couldn't quite believe that I was in the door and that Radio 1 wanted to pay me money. That was really mind-blowing. I was like, Radio 1 wants to pay me to work. I work for free. Like, what? So So worked there till, yeah, worked my way up and then managed to get to be an assistant producer on various shows. And then was a Mr. Jam show. Darry was my producer. I was the AP, producing Mr. Jam. Having the best time of my life. I was like, yeah, this is great. Really grateful for what I'm doing. I just couldn't quite believe I had a staff contract. I was working with Darry. He's flipping awesome. And then I got a call from Andy Royal, who works in BBC Audio still. He called me into the office. Would you like to launch the breakfast show? I was like, yes, this is my dream job. Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, yeah, yes, yes, yes. Then that started the 6 years of kind of the best job I've ever had by far. It was amazing. Yeah. It was absolutely amazing. Couldn't quite believe what was happening.
So that's when you worked with Nick Grimshaw, and then you went on and you worked with Maya Jammer and Jordan North, and then producer and then commissioner at BBC Sounds.
Yes, yes.
And now at Persephonica. Well, you were described as having an incredible knack for spotting gaps in the market and pairing unique talent with bold, unique ideas. When you're thinking about those bold, unique ideas, what are you primarily looking for in a new podcast idea or pitch?
I'm looking for somebody that makes me smile and makes me laugh. After all these years, I can see very quickly from putting somebody straight onto a mic on paper who should be a good guest or good presenter. You put them on and you're like, oh no, you can't do this. And that's not their fault. There's just some people, you put a mic in front of them and they just thrive. They're just incredible. They're addictive. And I've seen it so many times that I can see it now, and I trust my gut for when I do see it. I can spot them now and I can follow their journey as they get bigger and bigger. And I'm like, yes. And I've seen it and I'm like, oh, I should have got them, should have got them. Like, I remember when we first started BBC Sounds and they asked me to sort of basically, Rory said, yeah, do what you want to do, really. Get playlists of celebrities. I was like, okay, fine. Like, I contacted Amelia de Moldenberg. And 6 years ago, Amelia de Moldenberg wasn't that well known. Like, she was to a certain audience, but not across. And so I was trying to like go, yeah, come on, she's going to be really big. And nobody could spell her name. And then they're like, Amelia de what? I've always kind of seen who's already big or which audiences are really latching onto somebody, and that we should be catching up. I trust my gut and I love TV. I love music. I love radio. I love podcasts. I listen and watch everything. I love it. I love it all. I consume everything. So I'm across what's going on and what people should be listening to and what's not working, whatever. And I can hear as the producer in my head, I can hear what's working and why they're doing that and what sort of stuff. So I don't know if that's answered your question.
No, it has. No, absolutely. Because I think so many people think, oh, I've got a great idea, but it's more than just the idea, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the people. It's definitely the people. So already I've had conversations already with people that I've kind of been watching for a while that I can now say, I've been watching you like a weirdo for a long time. I can now ask you to do that thing. Would you like to do that thing? And they're like, oh yeah, I think you're great. Can we do that? I'm like, yes, please. But I'm having really great conversations like that. So that's just been really special. People do trust me because of my experience and also for what Persephonica has done and is continuing to do. Like, the company make really good shows and we make really good shows editorially. We don't want to ever, and I say this to people, to presenters when I'm talking to them about stuff, I'm like, I will never make you look bad. I'm never going to put you out there. I've got your back. So you just want somebody to feel as comfortable as they can and trust you. Because I have that experience of working in a team, and you're never going to make something that good unless you trust everybody in the room. And so that's really, really important for me. It's a genuine friendship, a genuine kind of partnership, really. And they need to believe me and they need to believe Persephonica to make it work. I'm getting so excited with the fact that the stuff that we're going to make can just make you laugh and just make you happy. This is one of the things why I love radio and audio and just anything. Like, we can make something that can just change your mood. I love listening to something and I laugh. I'm like, I'm folding the washing and I'm chuckling away and I love it. And I just like that we can still do that. And I think it's really, really exciting. There's lots of conversation around the podcast market, isn't there, around where it's going, what it's doing.
But yeah, visualization, whether we've got too many, whether you can never have enough. I mean, yeah, there's huge conversations around podcasts, but it's still quite a young, new format, really. You know, there's so much more. We don't know what's going to happen in the future, and that makes it quite exciting.
Yeah, it's constantly evolving. Ooh. And I think the word podcast, think that word puts people off in a funny way, but it's like content. You're consuming content, whether it's you're watching on YouTube, it's a social clip, it's audio, like, it's we're making great content that has hopefully entertained you. And that's kind of the goal, really.
A big thank you to Fiona Hanlon from Persephonica for being my guest. Applications for the Acting Managing Director maternity cover job need to be in by 10 a.m. on the 10th of April. You can check out the job spec and apply at radioacademy.org/category/work with us. If you want to keep up with the ARIA's nominations, then we'll have a live stream on the 8th of April from 7 p.m. on our YouTube channel. Go to our website, radioacademy.org, and click on Register to follow all the action. Then you'll be notified when the live stream starts. Good luck to everyone who entered. And talking of ARIA nominations, next week's podcast will focus on that very subject as I chat with category head judges Ray Paul and Rebecca Frank and head of the judges Bob Shannon about this year's judging process and what it means to be a nominee. I'll see you next week.